Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby make it hot. Ride the cop till you hit the spot. Tell my baby make it hot.
Doing the doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo.
And from high atop the planet Earth, it is I. I don't even know my name today. Mark Filippi here with Fabrishot and Naked Soma.
Yep, here
this?
We are.
Welcome to Flippin' Philo Week.
Oh, no. It's been Philo.
It's people.
Yeah.
I'm sick of the people.
I don't like
We've
them
had, well, liking them isn't the choice. We're one of them.
I know.
So if you're new to the show, we're disgusted with pretty much everything, and every week we discuss a different version of that disgust as we... look at pop culture with the jaundiced eye of universal semantics. Our phone number here in the sky is 646-478-4847. That's 646-478-4847. And this week we're talking about the Philos, that dominant part of the thematic universe that pretty much plagues the Earth. Val, why don't you give the audience a, 90 seconds on what a philo is and what a philo does, like a little Forrest Gump of the philos.
Hmm.
So they can, kind of get a sense of it.
All right. Well, a philo is a person who is focused on relationships, and they get a lot of pleasure from their relationships. And really, really serious philo, you know they're philo before they even get in the room. You can hear them out in the hall. They're giddy. They're chatting up with their friends. They're all excited, and they come flying into the room about 3 inches above the ground. I had a couple of students like that, if you remember.
Yes.
I think the first day you met Remy, she was outside the window, and you said, "There's a philo. There she is."
Well, they're happy to be amongst the peeps. That's what
right.
It is.
Yeah.
Eco can do that when he's walking out to throw the garbage and be happy to be outside.
That's true.
We'll go get into that. Every week we sort of talk this lingo and we forget that people might be listening for the first time and they don't know what the heck we're talking about. But I'll give you 5 seconds on that as we go around here. The way this system works, universal semantics, is there's a common ground in body language. No matter what system you study, no matter what continent you're on, there's going to be a point where you're going to start realizing all these maps overlap. And where the maps overlap is where the semantic terrain exists. And this is basically something we've been carrying with us biologically for eons, and now we kind of put some words to the music here in the work we're doing. And for the most part, what you got is those first 4 years of your life, you sort of get to spend 1 year in one particular point of view, building that area up, and then you shift to another one that's a little more complex, a little more diverse, and it builds on the previous year. First year of life, all you got is this philo stuff we're talking about. You're only as good as your ability to bond biologically the first year of life. So, of course, it's mother-child. It's all that baggage. And I guess you can throw a little Freudian stuff in there if you want to get nutty, if you're like a psychology type. But for the most part, that one is the basis that all of us have to go through in order to get to the second year. That's why there's so many people that love it so much, have so many coherent experiences of it, that they decide to eschew the other three that come after. Like, no, I don't want anything else. This is good enough for me. Because the bonding experience is something that's necessary for us to develop our brains. It's to develop all the different faculties we have to communicate. So it's an important one. It's definitely essential. It's the most foundational one we have. But we have other ones to choose from. And the rest of the population kind of spits out into those three. And these are those three. The second one is the second year of life. And you can always tell the newborn from the second-year baby, basically because one's mobile and the other one isn't. And the second one is, from the affect standpoint, one is completely dependent and the other one is trying to be independent. And that will be your ontosomatic, where you're onto yourself. Everything you do, everything you experience is relevant to you. So there's a lot of mind, and a lot of no, and a lot of separation going on that year. So that's the Onto year. So you have your Philo year, where you're just bond, and you have your Onto year, where you're, like, breaking those bonds, right? So you do that. That's all if you're getting into, like, intelligence. You have your interpersonal year, and you have your intrapersonal year. And then you get to the next year, the third year, where you start developing a little more of a relationship with the world. And that's the eco-somatic year. And that's when you get into, like, imagination and things like that. Stuff that isn't always so kind of concrete. And you're not really interested in the people so much. Or you're not really interested in yourself so much. You're interested in the experience, man. So that's your hippie year. And that's the third year. And that takes you off the map completely into the abstract one, which is the one that's the most rare amongst the somas, the exo-somatic year, the fourth year, where you can actually now plan and remember your actions. So the four-year-old, compared to the newborn, has a much more complex nervous system, of course, and is able to reflect and learn and choose and develop systems and things like that, get very techie about the way they act, and they could sort of form what would better be known as a worldview, where they can then use that and be very utopian about the other three and sort of say, well, which of those three works best for me, and I can select. So you become a little bit more organized in the way that you function, a little bit more categorized in the way you function, and as an adult, you become sort of the observer, the one that's in the background sort of monitoring everything instead of the one that's the leader or the one that's the follower or the one that's the rebel, like the ego. So there's your kind of like five-minute universal semantics tour de force. Those first 4 years of life are sort of your biological roller coaster ride, and when you get off the roller coaster ride, one of those 3 years was the year you had the most fun, and that becomes the basis of all the things you build on top of it while you're growing up and going through all your psychological mumbo-jumbo and building a personality on top of this thing that developed out of what? Just biology. You didn't choose it. It was just laid upon you. So that's where we start the discussion every week, because pop culture, that thing, that big yolky envelope over all of us, is reflecting the elements of these domains, as we call them, every week. And why? Because we live under the moon. Every lunar phase emphasizes one of these four domains and guides things like dream cycles and neurotransmitters and all a bunch of other fancy stuff. And so we kind of riff on those things as they surface during the week. So this week, we're in the Philo domain. So we are just full of the yolk of that Philo-ness. And since we're just about, finishing up spring tonight, right? Tomorrow's the first day of summer.
That's right.
We have some business this week to get to. We're going to get to the more towards the top of the hour when we talk about how we're going to prepare for the season. Because we're shifting not just from the lunar phase, but we're also shifting our seasonal orientation from the Philo spring to the Onto summer, which is a big deal. Mm-hmm. We're going to get up on our 2 feet now, and it's the growing season, where the spring is the planting season, right? So we have all that going on for us. So there's a lot of things to talk about here as
but
we wrap up a...
We're right on schedule then, since we planted some roots in spring and now...
Oh, I guess you want to announce it this week on the show? We could.
I think we should.
I think we should. We signed the damn thing. Okay. Yeah. I guess starting the week of July 2nd, Val and I will have a new office, not as high above the streets of Larchmont, just a couple of feet lower than I am now, over there on Myrtle Boulevard, 178 Myrtle Boulevard, in beautiful downtown Larchmont, New York. And it'll be called Soma Space.
That's right.
Yeah. And we'll be teaching classes there and annoying all our neighbors. And we welcome you to join us there. So we'll have more to say about that, because we're going to be doing a little funky stuff with the website. Right now it's lightthepathlive.com. And you can go up there and take the self-profiler, figure out which of the four narratives fits you and all that. And that's going to kind of be, you know, we're going to change the name of the site and just move some things around. You'll see that in a couple of weeks, so we'll talk about that when it comes up. But for the most part, we're going to be able to teach this stuff live and in person, jujitsu style.
That's right.
Of course, here on the site here, and you know, on the blog and all that, and on the show. So we're getting, you know, some of the elements. So you're right, the planting the seeds and then the growing season, I guess,
right,
and then the harvest in the fall.
I cannot wait to be sitting on the couch there watching the big TV with our cable TV in there, the remote and everything. Well, you know, we had to pay extra for the remote, right? I'm like, we need the remote. We don't want to get up.
Oh, we need the remote.
Change the station. No.
Well, actually, we should probably get two remotes so that if my son visits, that we could just take the batteries out of that one and then throw it against the wall or something.
Oh, no. Well, you know what? I have a bunch of extra remotes here as I'm packing my house.
Fine.
Yeah, we'll have a couple of extras for him.
Yeah, he could just, like, we'll just get, like, a, you know, a mattress against the wall you can whip it against and make him happy. That'd be a nice meeting, him and our landlord, huh?
Oh, for sure.
The gentlest Philo in the universe and the most unstable, turbulent exo in captivity, my son.
So. At least he's cute.
Yeah, I'm always reminded of that. If he didn't look the way he looked, it would be a different story. He'd be prisoner X.
Yep.
Okay. So, again, phone number here is 646-478-4847. I know you're listening, if not live and replay. So we can't call us on replay. You got to get on the air. We want you out there talking to us because this stuff, to me, is only as good as the conversation we have about it. And we have people like last week. I got the opportunity to meet the summer school class up there in Manhattanville, and we're looking at some of the papers they wrote. Interesting mix. We had pretty much, I don't remember the numbers, but we had pretty much an equal amount of students from each of the primary domains, and it's been our kind of our history anyway to have more ecos than anything else. But
yeah, it was four philos, four ecos, three ontos, and the lone exo. And speaking of the lone exo, I think there one might be one coming to my house right now. I hear an awful lot of noise in the hall.
Yeah, there's commotion downstairs. There's the onto dog.
That's right. The onto dog, the philo cat, and the exo husband, and he's shaking his head because he knows we're on the air.
Yeah. Well, at least he doesn't do any work. You know, in the fall, when we're back on the air in Manhattanville, he'll be manning the technical part. Hopefully. Are they building that thing? You have any news of that, by the way?
No.
The Manhattanville, the bunker?
Yeah, I don't
know.
The
bunker of broadcasting?
I don't know what's going on over there. I see the building going up more and more every day, so I'm not too sure. They're making progress. They were thinking like October.
It's supposed to be a first-class operation, right? Oh, October now. Okay.
Yep. I'm going to kill this dog.
Go ahead, kill it. What you're witnessing, folks, is a live on the air murder of an animal.
He is another one who's lucky he's cute.
No, you have to sell me on that yipping dog, boy.
Oh, he's cute.
Yeah, sure. Unbelievable. All right, well, just turning our attention to the topic on the blog there. One of the biggest things with Philos is their dumbassness, for lack of a better word. And this is not innocent dumbness. This is not I didn't know dumbness. This is I don't want to know dumbness. You could take any stereotype you want, dumb blondes, any of that stuff. I'm just thinking out loud of, I'm trying to think of... not so much Brittany, but, is her name Jennifer Simpson? Is that her name? My mind is going off the rack here.
I don't, they're all the
same
bimbo to me.
Anyway, it's that
Jessica.
Mindset of
Jessica
Simpson. I'm all over the map. Yeah, Jessica.
I had to look it up.
That's bad. Yeah, okay. That's how lame we are with this. It's like they get paid, they get rewarded, they get idolized, actually, for being very beautiful and very dumb. Paris Hilton's having an epiphany over there in the jail cell out there in California, but for the most part, the rest of them are not copping to it. They're going to stay. I mean, I saw a commercial the other day that they're doing a lot of this stuff now for HDTV where they show a piece of an old movie and then the person turns to the camera and starts breaking the fourth wall down and go, why aren't you watching me in HD? You know, and it was Pamela Anderson, from Baywatch, And it's like this, the perfect example, okay? Now, she's eco. But she plays a philo on TV. So it's funny how that we almost don't want to see a combination of beauty and brains. We don't want to see, it's too intimidating to see that. And for philos, it's not so much that they're one-dimensional. It's just that they cannot handle depth. Depth confuses them. Depth makes them very anxious because they don't like complexity. And that's why the keep it simple thing, the dumbing down thing, the make it simpler, make it easy, slow it down thing, is sort of like their mantra, and that's why when something like the iPhone comes out, like we talked about last week, it's like they don't have to think. It's everything's just touch tone, and it's like, and the way that they talk about it and advertise it, do you see? It's a touch tone screen. It's just so funny that that's become sort of the leading way to market something. Make it simple, make it easy, make it fast, you know, and it'll sell no matter what it is. You know, that stupid TomTom thing, the GPS thing? The guy falls in love with the machine. It's
mm-hmm.
like, and it's just, it's always about bonding with it, too. They can't just have a machine or technology. It's like, they have to fall in love with the technology. They have to be a romance with it, because that's the theme of the Philo domain is eros. It's love. It's bonding. It's that sense of connection and wholeness with everything.
Well, it makes sense that they're gonna market to them since... 68%.
Well, they're everywhere.
68% of people are Philo.
Yeah, that's a stat you might want to repeat, because people that getting used to universal semantics just got used to those four words. But that number is awesome.
68% people.
Yeah, okay. That means almost all of you listening to us, thinking about listening to us, forgetting to listen to us, are flipping Philos.
Yep.
And it's scary when you're not a Philo. To understand and to process that, because the Philo point of view is not that difficult to slip into. People like to belong. People like to be accepted. People like to be included. People like to be popular.
Sure.
Those are all things that the Philos love.
Yep.
And so it's like, you know, you think about the way we choose political candidates today. It's not so much what they're really saying, it's how they look when they're saying it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't elect Bill Bradley. He's boring. And he looks like a pelican. So we can't elect him. But the guy's like a flipping genius. All right. But he's XO, so we can't elect him. He's got no personality. So, you know, but we can put any bird up there that squawks like Hillary, you know, because she intimidates us. Oh, but I'm telling you, it's funny, because now, I just was driving around today, you know, the news is, about Bloomberg leaving his party and which way is he going to split the vote and all this stuff. And I'm saying, what's the big deal? What's Bloomberg to anybody? You know, he's a rich guy, so it's going to polarize one way. And he's socially liberal, so he's going to polarize another way. To me, he's the ultimate milquetoast. I don't understand why everyone's so afraid of the guy. You know, and domain-wise, what do you think, Mr. Bloomberg? Mr. Mayor, man.
You know what?
Mister, I don't want to pay the cops, man.
I can't even get a visual of him.
Put him up. Put him on. Put him on the wiki.
All right. Let me take a look.
I want you to do this. Is a live profiling, folks.
All right. Here we go.
We were talking about this last week at the in the class. There's four ways to profile another person, and the quickest way is to just look at their eyes and figure out, you know, what energy they're putting out, things like that. But the way that I recommend for more accuracy is to do the narratives, because that's the one that gives you more of the background story on the person. There's other ways, too, but this is the quickest way to do it, is to just put yourself in front of a picture of the person and realize you're only profiling the picture, but the more interactions you have, the more you kind of guess what they are.
Hmm.
Go ahead.
I get music. I got to look at a couple of different pictures here, not just the one.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't really like looking at him.
He's hard to look at.
Yeah,
he's unelectable because of that.
He's very hard to look at. It's kind of making me want to turn away.
He's not a happy guy.
Oh. Let's find another one. I'm trying to find one where he looks like he's happy to be alive, and I'm really not finding it.
Well, he's not quite a miserab.
Here's one where his eyes are like kind of off. He's looking in two different directions. Got one where he's staring right through my skull here. And then there's one that kind of looks a little mushy. I don't know.
Sort of like his political affiliations. He's kind of a milquetoast guy. He's like, well, where is he? Is he left or right? Right or what?
Really, seriously, look at a bunch of different pictures of him, and he has a really different feel in every one of them.
And what would the pattern of ambiguity and lack of definition be in the domain way?
Well, that would be an etho.
Yes, but he's a very, very saucy, kind of like bittersweet eco. There's a lot of stuff that got in there that might not get out.
Yep.
It's not a happy-go-lucky ego.
Not even in one picture. I'm still looking at pictures. He's not happy. Mm. This one, he looks like somebody bent him over.
Oh, God. Yeah. So it's like, it's funny. Everyone's threatened by the ego coming into the mix. And all he's going to do is be fodder for the Anto and be basically the sort of the dirty guy for the Philos to run against, because he's got so many things in there that you can pick on. It's almost like, you know, you look at Giuliani, who's just this, he's like the male version of Hillary. He's this ontosaurus that just never stops. He doesn't care if he's congruent or not. He just comes right at you. And it's all his beliefs. Doesn't matter if his beliefs make sense. And you could just kind of Olay a guy like that. But you put him against, like, some of the other candidates that are in there that have come through, like a Mitt Romney that is scary Philo, like almost like Stepford Philo, like, hi, I have perfect hair. Hi. You know, it's like no one's like me, but my name is Mitt, so I can't relate to the man. So it's funny because I don't see anybody that's really, like, standout electable. None of them. They all have all these kind of, like, you know, baggage with them.
I say we run you.
Yeah, I'll run.
I think that would be fun.
Man, oh, man. Sure. Osama for president.
What would you be? What would your platform be?
Let's see. What would my platform be? Probably be leftovers for all. Something like that.
Great. This is what I need.
And if elected, we will all eat leftovers alone. No more group eating.
Oh, God.
A food court with TVs and pillow mats.
Oh, that's right. You know what's funny? Our TV in the kitchen is a really nice TV, but the cable box seems to have blown up on us, and we don't want to get a new one because we're moving. So it seems Rick and I are eating in the living room because that's where the TV is. Can't just sit and look at each other and talk. I mean, that would be...
No, conversation. That's not happening.
No.
And your relationship is built on those deep late-night conversations, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of...
Well, what I want to do now is one of the things I would encourage everyone listening to the show and everyone not listening to the show, listening to it in replay, to check out this movie that Mike Judge made called Idiocracy. It is flippin' hilarious. Because what he's doing, of course, ego that he is and exo talent that he has, is he's looking at the culture through that, you know, kind of like the one joke that you could just keep permeating through for an hour and a half in a movie format, which is pretty much what you see in almost every comedy, like whether it's 40-Year-Old Virgin or whatever, this new movie called Knocked Up that I want to get to see, is that they take something that's in the Philo culture and they just keep teasing it out. Okay? So this is, this is so funny. This is a clip from the movie that isn't on the blog that I'm going to play for you that brings up, like, if we were in the year 2505 and the Philos continue to run the universe, this would be a visit to the doctor. Okay, I'm just going to see if I can play this here for us. And we'll discuss.
Hey! How's that hang, S.A.?
Yeah, right. Well, not so good. You know, I don't really know what's going on, but I'm seeing things. I think it might be because of these drugs the Army put me on. But if you could just get me well enough to get back to base.
Right. Kick ass. Well, don't want to sound like a dick or nothing, but it says on your chart that you're fucked up. You talk like a fag, and your shit's all retarded. What I do is just say, hey, yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
no, I'm serious here.
Oh, don't worry, Skrull. Now there are plenty of tards out there living really kick-ass lives. My first wife was tarded. She's a pilot now.
I need for you to be serious for a second here, okay? I need help.
There's that fag talk we talked about. All right, so that'll be this many dollars. And if you could just go ahead and, like, put your...
tattooing
that shit.
This thing has...
There you go.
That's nice.
Here's a visit to the doctor in 2505.
Gives us something to look forward to.
You talk like a fag, and your shit's all retarded. Anyway, There's something about that clip that just makes me laugh every time I see him, because the guy comes out and he's just, he kind of reminds me of me. He's like Eco. But it just was funny to see that, and that's kind of, like I said, that's what it becomes when you take the Philo domain and you just kind of cast it over society. Every time you see this pop culture stuff come up, I mean, literally, the big news today on Yahoo was that Rosie O'Donnell will now pursue the Price is Right job.
I don't understand that at all.
No, but the Philos are fascinated with this. Who's going to succeed Bob Barker?
Over.
It's like, that's where we're at. Could that have made news 10 years ago?
I hope not.
I just wonder about that. I mean, even 5 years ago, pre-9/11, could that have made news?
I don't know. You know,
I mean did 9/11, was 9/11 so serious and so devastating that everything since then has been the opposite?
Hmm.
I mean, if you go back 10 years, what was pop culture this ridiculous? We didn't have reality shows, really. We had Survivor right before 9/11, right? That was like the only one. And the flipping Real World. We didn't do these things.
No.
I mean, we spent the whole summer chasing Regis Philbin around asking if that was the final answer. You know, and now there's like shows that do nothing but review other reality shows.
Really?
Yeah, it's replaced the soap opera. Why have anyone that's trained how to act when we can hire these people, these scrouts, as the guy calls them in the thing, which is hilarious. Relax, scrout. And just let them, you know, pirouette for the camera because they're getting attention. It's like the mooks that go down every morning and watch the Today Show, and they scream when the weather report comes. You know, they come in from Nebraska with their sign, you know, and they're out there, they're out behind the window. They got to peer through the window. There's a fascination with the window. Every stinking show, whether it's a sports show, you can put on like locally here we have a sports channel called SNY, and they built the studio and they put the little fishbowl in so that the people going by outside can peer in and wave through the window while they're doing the sports report.
That's nice.
Same thing down the dial on MSG. They got a smaller window for like one or two morons. Hey, look at me. And then of course the ultimate thing is when they're looking through the window, watching themselves on TV, and then they call someone on their cell phone so they can watch themselves on TV. That's where we're at. I just think this is, and that's why I'm saying, the only way this can ever propagate past like one person is because the Philos run the universe, because they love to see their face. That's how they sell everything. That's how we've gotten picture perfect in almost everything we do. And it's like to see people, to see themselves, to see the families, to see all these things that they sell all this technology with. How do you think they sell, you know, all these websites where we can make a photo album of everything, and they get the grandparents involved. They make it dirt simple so that grandma doesn't, like, you know, have a stroke trying to send an email, you know. It's all done to connect people more. And, you know, I was talking about, you know, when I went out to the Great Midwest, in the dinosaur age of the late 80s, a couple days ago, and then my connection to my family back home was limited to one phone call a week, and of course my mother with the letters, and the Daily Word and all that stuff. But you didn't have the constant contact. Literally, there's a company called Constant Contact now. I just thought of that. That we're so interconnected that a kid goes away to school. Like my sister went to Marist up the pike here near Poughkeepsie, right? And family grew up on Long Island. She went home every other weekend, and she went to Albany to see her boyfriend, now husband, every other weekend. So she was never really away at college. She went to classes 5 days a week, and then from Friday night to Sunday night, she was with the familiar people. She never really got to know anyone from college.
Huh.
Which, you know, Marist ain't cheap.
No.
And it's like, I don't understand, what you're really paying for when you go away to college is to acquire another world that you can then go out into a bigger world. You don't stay in the same world. And I think there's just a lot of lily pads sitting when it comes to, I don't see a lot of world traveler Philos. I just don't. You know, they get their little milieu, and they kind of fester in it, and that's where I think this mentality comes of being an insider or an outsider. Almost every discipline has it. I don't care if it's politics or religion, you're or entertainment, the insider, right? The show's the insider. Because that womb-like theme is everywhere in the Philo universe. It's like, are you on the inside? Are you in the know? Do you have the latest dirt? It's like all that stuff is so Philo. It makes me nuts. But that's like what I talk about with on the blog here. It's gotten to the point where even making fun of it has gotten Philo. You know, we're now like the caveman people have their own sitcom coming up, which should be hilarious.
I cannot wait for that.
When did that start, in the fall?
I don't know.
I think it starts this fall. I think it's an October show.
I don't know.
But I'll be there. I'll be there.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just asking Rick. He didn't know either.
Mm-hmm. Bottom of the hour. No phone calls yet. I think we're on like our third week with no phone calls. Where's the Bonto? She's got to call in and yell at me.
I don't know.
Yeah. She'd stomp on the floor and say, hey, we're on the air here.
Yeah.
So let's see. Phone number here, 646-478-4847. I don't know if we're going to be joined by the Jebster tonight. I think he's off the radio and out there on the tip of the Cape out there in Massachusetts on vacation with the fam. Waiting the arrival of the twins.
That's right.
Which, of course, will baby make six.
Wow.
He's writing that book.
Beginning of
and
August.
And I'm telling you, I'm going to need smelling salts when that's over. Because I have two kids. I could not even fathom what six would be like.
I don't have any. I couldn't fathom two.
No, I'm just saying that knowing what I know about that universe, it would not be pretty. You'd have to really restrain me on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's tough. Well, he is a Philo, and he does love the family stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good for him.
Oh, yeah, good. Exactly, good for him. Only him. He's Philo. He actually likes it. So, I'm gonna play another clip here from Idiocracy because I'm just fascinated with this movie. This is the intro, in about 2 minutes.
As the 21st century began, human evolution was at a turning point. Natural selection, the process by which the strongest, the smartest, the fastest reproduced in greater numbers than the rest, a process which had once favored the noblest traits of man, now began and left the intelligent to become an endangered species.
Having kids is such an important decision.
We're just waiting for the right time. Not something you want to rush into, obviously.
No way.
Oh, shit, I'm pregnant again!
I got too many damn kids. Thought you was on the pill or some shit.
Hell no.
Must have been thinking of
Brittany. No, Jason.
There's no way we could have a child now. Not with the market the way it is, no.
No, that just wouldn't make any sense.
Come on over here, bitch! He don't care about
Well, we finally decided to have children, and I'm not pointing fingers, but it's not going well.
And this is helping.
I'm just saying that before I have in vitro, maybe you should be willing to...
It's always me, right?
Well, not my sperm count.
Yeah! I'm gonna fuck all of you!
Cleavon is lucky to be alive. He attempted to jump a jet ski from a lake into a swimming pool and impaled his crotch on an iron gate.
Oh.
But thanks to recent advances in stem cell research and the fine work of Drs. Krensky and Altshuler, Cleavon should regain full reproductive function.
Hands off my junk!
Unfortunately, Trevor passed away from a heart attack while masturbating to produce sperm for artificial insemination. But I have some eggs frozen, so just as soon as the right guy comes along, you know.
And so it went for generations, although few, if any, seem to notice.
There you go.
Unbelievable. I have to see that.
No, I never saw it. I'm telling you, the first 20 minutes of that movie should be played like a PSA in 2-minute increments all over the Philo dial. Because there is a propensity, I mean, if you think about, even in it doesn't matter what level socioeconomically, I mean, the mindset of more is better when it comes to kids. I don't understand it, but the Philos do. I mean, if Jeb was here, maybe he'd be able to talk about it with the six kids. It boggles my mind, knowing what we know about the population, knowing what we know about everything. I mean, growing up, I knew a lot of families that had 8, 10, 12 kids. I couldn't understand it.
No.
They were like football teams, you know. And now you see sort of like a stratification of it. You see a lot of twos and threes, a couple of fours. You hardly ever see anything, you know, above five or six. I mean, that's just, I don't know. That's just otherworldly. But it they used to be this propensity to have, you know, lots and lots of kids. Actually, one of our would-be landlords, I believe, has five. And
yeah.
He's flipping Philo, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. We like him.
Yeah, we didn't ask Redhead Jeb how many kids he had, did we?
No. No.
Mm. Seeing as he works in a group that's a family business.
Right, that's right. Everybody in there is family, I think.
But that, yeah. And this concept of family, I mean, that to me is one of the biggest things that's gotten into the culture and just kind of sat there and just festered in the last maybe 50 years. Once corporate America kind of rose from the industrial stuff in the 50s, and people spent more time at work, and their work sort of permeated their lives, the one thing that the corporate America put out there to kind of lure the woman to work was they say, it's just like a family here. And in they went, you know. And it's like then you get and what's the thing that everyone knows about families? They're dysfunctional, most of them.
That's for sure. I don't know a single family that's not dysfunctional in some way.
The people that study it say 97% of them are dysfunctional.
Yeah, and the other 3% are lying.
The other 3% are studying the 97. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is that's what corporate America used the most. You know, kind of volatile part of our culture. We said, no, we'll pull that right into the corporate ethos, and that will pull the women into the workforce, thinking that they're liberating themselves from their home lives, and they're just taking it to work.
Yep.
And, you know, now can you breastfeed at your desk? You know,
come on.
Oh, yes. Ugh. That's an issue. Then they made those little rooms off to the side.
Yeah.
You know, then you had flex time. Then you had maternity leave. I mean, there's a zillion things that come up, you know, when you start bringing, you know, family life into the workplace. And then the whole decision of, you know, if you're going to, you know, be able to have a career as a woman faced with all those different choices to make. You know, because every time you make a choice as a woman, you're making a choice as a Philo woman, even if you're not Philo. Because you're the source of the Philo domain. You have to be reproducing in order to be in the game. You know, so it's a as you come out of the you know, sort of the tent there a little bit and you look at what you're doing, I don't know. Does the average woman of 22, 23 knows where and when she wants to be living when she's in her 40s or 50s? I don't think they do. I think they guess. And it's a big leap of faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know how they make it when they don't even know, you know, what the options really are. I think they kind of, I mean, what's the pressure on a woman from, say, oh, I'm going to go a little north of 20, say like 23 to 35 to get married and have a kid on a scale of 1 to 10? What would be the cultural pressure is to do those
culture,
two things?
Oh, it's very high. It's very high.
So there's
like
a stigma attached to both?
7 or 8.
Wow.
Get
married, there's still a big pressure to get married.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep,
because
there's
a lot of them
kids
that have,
and parents are afraid that their kids are going to have kids without being married.
But even in this age where there's not a lot of, like, people
uh-huh.
get married a little older,
uh-huh.
there's a pressure to, is it a match set? Like, if you're going to have kids, get married?
I guess.
For a guy, it doesn't matter. The guy could be, you know, 50 and decide to do that.
Yeah, just ask.
There is
Tony
no pressure
Randall.
On a guy. If you're Tony Randall, right, yeah. You could be cranking about when you're 80.
Yeah, because I've taken a lot of crap because I didn't want to have kids. I still take a lot of crap.
But from who? From people you knew or people you didn't know?
People, well, a lot from people I don't know online. You know, they ask you, so, you know, are you married? Yes. How many kids do you have? I don't have any. Oh, I'm sorry. Pray to God and you'll have one. I want to take the computer and break it into a million pieces when I hear that. It makes me absolutely crazy. And then when I tell them
the equation
I don't want
is if you're married.
They tell me then, you know, why did you get married? I said, well, I got married because I love my husband. I'm not sure why you got married. They don't have any answer to that.
The math is, if you're married, you should have kids.
Right. That's the
otherwise,
only reason
why'd you get married?
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Makes me crazy.
Wow.
And that's silly because most people, well, not most people, but many people walking around are not married and have a bunch of kids, and nobody says anything to them.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. If we have one there to call us here at 646-478-4847. If you're with child or children and you're not married, because there's a lot of single parents, too.
Yep.
They count as being not married, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Brady Bunch situations that haven't been,
Yep.
Haven't
call
found the other side yet.
Let us know if you catch any crap.
I think no matter what sort of pattern you put up there, anything to do with mother-child and not having the traditional sort of environment for them, and you could have mixed religions, mixed races, all kinds of funny things in there that someone in the middle of the bell curve is going to have a problem with it.
Because
they can't accept difference. They can't accept variety. It threatens them to no end. And then,
right.
And the funny part is now all those differences and all those nuances, they want to legislate it. They want to make it so that there's a law against doing some of this stuff. And you got to realize, I think from the Mason-Dixon line down to the, you know, the Gulf Coast, there's almost like a time warp when it comes to the FILO domain, where you're in the 1850s. I mean, you're really pre-Civil War in a lot of those pockets, and that population puts out a lot of people. I mean, it's a dense part of the population of the country down there, and they have a completely different way of looking at human life than other parts of the country. I mean, you go California, okay, it's got some variety as you go up the coast, but it's nowhere near as Bible belty as down south. And in the Midwest, of course, I don't know, a lot of corn in the veins out there, but you know, they're much more tolerant, I think, because there's not as much population. It's much more spread out. You know, but you go down anywhere, you know, Arkansas, Mississippi, any of those states down there, and you can basically look at a time lapse of America. You can be looking at stuff that faded out in other parts of the country, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. It's still there. Church on Sunday, that kind of stuff. You know, the whole blue law thing. Do we still have blue laws in the state?
I don't know.
Can't get a beer before 12 on Sunday? Like, that matters to anyone?
We do still have that here.
Okay. Because that's another thing with FILOs, by the way. They love tradition, and they love their religion a lot. Not that you have to be FILO to love your religion, but the FILOs, because of their population, they can get something like a blue law passed. And no one's going to have a problem with it. You know, all the debates the last year and a half, as Bush, the phony FILO, you know, waves God at you, whether it comes to, you know, how you make decisions about whether to go to war or not, he just asks God, and God tells him what to do. Or eavesdrop on conversations, again, ask God, God tells him what to do. And in the Bible and everything else that's gone on with bringing church and state back together again, like it worked the first time.
Yeah, that was great.
You know, that's another big contradiction within the FILO domain is, what's the role of religion? Again, it's just like bringing family into corporate life. When you bring religion into political life, you have a mess.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the exos come in, and they go, keep it separated. And, you know, the Constitution was, thank God, the Constitution was exo about it. It was laced with a lot of, you know, kind of ambiguities in some spots because, like, things like slavery would override things about men being created equal, stuff like that. But, you know, Civil War settled that 100 years later. But for the most part, it made a lot of things that were sort of, as you would say, common sense, common sense. It wasn't debatable. This cruel and unusual punishment, that, you know, that, and one of the amendments, I always think is kind of funny because there's a lot of things that happen that are cruel, and there's a lot of things that happen that are unusual, but you can't have the combination. We have an amendment for that.
That's right.
You know, so we could make people watch, you know, horrible TV shows, cruel, or Fox News, unusual. But the combination,
not okay.
There's a law.
Mm-hmm.
There's a law against that.
We have a listener who would like you to profile them. I sent you their picture, by the way. I emailed it.
Oh, all right. Let me Pontaine. The first one or the second one? You emailed it to me or you IM me?
I emailed it.
Oh, all right. I'm over here looking on the IM. That's Bloomberg.
Yeah, those are some funny pictures of him I found.
Okay. All right, well, we got about 15 minutes left if anyone has anything to say about these Philos. Anyone out there to defend the Philos? Because Philo Jeb is indisposed with his feet in the ocean somewhere.
Yeah, lucky him, huh?
I always picture him walking around with a ukulele. I don't know why.
I got the Hawaiian shirt. Yeah, I get the Hawaiian shirt with him, yeah.
With a straw hat.
Yep, straw hat.
You know, Huck Finn in it.
Yep.
Thank God I'm a country boy. All right, let's see. Okay, oh, what's this? Oh, I got an email to call home. That's nice. Sarah listening in.
Okay. Our listener, James, wanted me to say a code word so he knows that we're here live, but I'm not going to say the code word.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay. All right. Who is this guy?
He's a listener.
All right. Do we know him? You do?
You don't know him. I know him from the computer.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Well,
he's out in Michigan,
what do you think?
I think.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Looking pretty exo to me, even though he's got a little eco shirt on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there you go.
The
1 minute profiler.
Exo.
Man, he's got that going on. He's got that, like, going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, glad we handled that. What's his name?
James.
What? James, you're an exo. Live life. Go to the self-profiler page there on lightthepathlive.com. Read about yourself and share it with your four or five techie friends, I guess. I want to play this clip from the blog because I just love it so much. Third clip from Idiocracy in the Hour. Yeah, boot it up here. And now we find out. I've got the computer's working today. Let's see. Okay. Loading.
For the last time, I'm pretty sure what's killing the crops is this Brondo stuff.
The Brondo's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
So wait a minute. What you're saying is that you want us to put water on the crops?
Yes.
Water. Like out the toilet?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be out of the toilet, but yeah, that's the idea.
But Brondo's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
Okay, look. The plants aren't growing. So I'm pretty sure that the Brondo's not working. Now, I'm no botanist, but I do know that if you put water on plants, they grow.
Well, I've never seen no plants grow out of no toilet.
Hey, that's good. You sure you ain't the smartest guy in the world?
Yeah.
Okay, look, you want to solve this problem. I want to get my pardon, so why don't we just try it, okay? And not worry about what plants crave.
Brondo's got what plants crave.
Yeah, it's got electrolytes.
What are electrolytes? Do you even know?
What they used to make Brondo.
Yeah, but why did they use them to make Brondo?
Because Brondo's got electrolytes.
There you go.
That was funny.
That's classic. That's classic. And if you're able to watch the movie, they all use the same hand gestures when they say electrolytes.
Maybe we should get that and bring it to the office. We can
what?
Do it.
What?
We can get that movie. Bring it to the office.
Oh, yeah. That's a somatic cinema night made in heaven.
Yep.
Doing that.
We'll have to get it.
God, I'm just a big fan of the movie because it really hits home on so many levels. And it's funny because the movie didn't do hardly anything in the box office. Okay? But it sold like pancakes, like hotcakes. On a DVD because of the fact that this thing was so clippable. You can YouTube it to death. And if you go on YouTube and you put Idiocracy, you might come back tomorrow with all the clips that are on there because it's scenes like that that you'd miss in a movie that when you watch it, because it is kind of like a little bit of a skit, and all these little scenes are just, they're priceless. I mean, it's just, it's you watch the woman gesture, but Bronwyn's got electrolytes. It's just, oh, laugh out loud. Anyway, I pontane. So, again, our number is 646-478-4847. Who will be the lucky first caller on our 53rd minute? Oh, boy. Well, yeah, exactly. Oh, man. Well, I guess I should turn my attention to the somascopes as we wind down here.
Yeah, I wish you would. You know, there's a lot of craziness going on between the retrograde and the change of the seasons and everything. Everybody I talked to has been out of sorts.
It's going to continue. We don't get to the accommodation point with that, you know, for quite a while. You know, we're in this transition now. Again, the somatic summer started back on the 9th, okay, when we started this new cycle. So you've got that going on. Now, we're just finishing up the phylo week. We go onto, I believe, on Saturday. So we make it through the season change on the 21st, and then we leap the frog, leap the shark, whatever, on Saturday and head into Antonis through the end of the month, through the 30th, full moon's on the 30th. So, but we don't get to the accommodation point of the summer till around the 17th of July, 12th to 17th of July. So this, and I don't think Mercury goes direct until around the 9th. You know, so we're looking at a good couple of weeks here of confusion. Well, just a lot of layers, donkey, for the most part. Yeah. So just taking a gander at it. You know, we're sitting here now on the 20th, and tomorrow's the seasonal transition. So that means that everything that's gone on the last 3 months in your relationships, the last 3 months in your sense of vulnerability towards the world, anything that's made you feel weak and small and insignificant is about to shift into the Anto perspective, which is sort of a, you know, Revenge of the Nerds kind of a thing. And now you're going to go more into creativity. You're going to go more into your power. You're going to go more into your core, and you're going to forget the world because there is no world in the Anto domain. There's only you. So you're going to go from reaching out, touching hands, to, you know what, I need my space. So there's going to be a lot of cocooning going on as we make this transition, because it's very odd to be coming out of a phylo season, being in the phylo domain, and then having it switch to Anto on you. So for the next couple of days at least, a little bit weird for both the phylos and the Antos out there, trying to figure out which of the two themes they're going to operate on, because during the week this week, we're still phylo. Then as we shift tomorrow, we're going to start booting up for 3 months of Antoing, and that completely changes everything energetically and all the other side of it. So we're switching from, if we're talking Chinese, you're going from the wood element to the fire element. So there's a lot of passion that comes up. So you're going to have a lot of Antos freaking out about the phylos around them. So just beware. If you're a phylo in the midst of an Anto, it's going to be a lot of Edith and Archie going on.
Uh-oh.
For a couple of days. Yeah, a lot of that.
Good.
So alert the affiliates downstairs to take evasive action.
Okay, I'll
it could
them
be
know.
Bumpy.
That's
now
great.
The other thing that comes up, because we're in retrograde, we're still going backwards to everything from the last retrograde. So you got stuff that's going on from the winter, which of course was exo, that's going to come folding back on you too on another level. So now that's three of the four domains up in the air. So guess who gets to carry them all on his little head, like a coolie that he is. The lonely eco.
Oh, brother.
So the eco who can handle the multiple dimensions thing actually is going to get sort of like the this is ground control to Major Tom kind of perspective. I'm stepping through the door. So we're going to have a lot of ecos that are going to have the out-of-body experience during the day kind of a thing. Okay? So for the next week or so, and especially going into early part of July, when we get into an actual eco week, the ecos who are normally empathic, normally open to other people, are going to start to go the other direction, and they're going to become open to themselves. So a lot of sort of spontaneous epiphanies going on for the ecos. So if you find someone standing in the middle of traffic doing a pirouette, you know, or like me when I was singing my little country song before at the hot dog stand, the ecos are going to seem not only to be in their own world, but to be okay about being in their own world and not really caring about the feedback around them. So a lot of people are going to be ignoring the information coming from others. The exos are the only ones, because they're the ones kind of riding the crest of this retrograde, that are going to sort of escape a lot of that stuff because they don't interact with people. They don't rely on people for stuff. They're not into the drama of relationships. So their big thing is going to be to really prepare for. They're the only ones that are going to do a good job of preparing for the summer coming up, because that's their kryptonite. If you're dealing with it polarity-wise, the one thing that the exo can't stand or stops all their trains is that big Brahma bull Anta that's standing in front of them. So the summer represents that to them on a three-month scale. So you're going to get exos that have kind of been a little elusive this spring, and they're going to start coming out of nowhere and clearing the path. I always welcome the summer constructions when they're on the roads around here. That's the exos chipping away at the Antas. You know, they come out, they open up, they do all the construction and all the roads, and they're sort of saying, okay, all this stuff needs to be sloughed off. And they operate on that level interactively, too. So they operate on the level of sort of clearing the deck. So you're going to see a lot of, like, we were talking about a lot of garage sales and yard sales the last month. That's gone. Now it's going to be government construction, formal stuff, wrecking balls everywhere. You know, people packing up and leaving because it's the summer. They're going on vacations. You're going to see a lot of that. There was a report in the news before about the storms that caused all the delays yesterday. My poor mother flying in from Chicago like for 6 hours, that the radars were off, and they were delaying the plane. A lot of weird stuff happened because of, course, the retrograde. So you're going to see a lot of technological sort of cleaning going on. And, you know, next week is when the iPhone comes in, so the people are sleeping on the sidewalk looking for that. You know, you got lots of things going on. Underneath the rainbow there. So, all right, so we're wrapping it up. We got a minute left. And do you have any final comments on the old philos there? I think we're done. Travel light through the darkness, guys.
Bye.
See you next week.